afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. The time is 1:02 p.m. Members present at this time, Representative Chris Tuck, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative Ivy Sponholz, Representative George Rauscher, Vice Chair Representative Greer Hopkins, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. If we could please ask you to silence your cell phones as we get started, we'd appreciate that. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Ms. Debbie Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Douglas Bridges. Thank you to both of you for your help today. Today's meeting has two items. The first is going to be taking up House Bill 3, State Land Sale PFD Voucher and Assignment, and then we are going to do consideration of the governor's appointees. At probably about 40 minutes into the committee hearing, I have a hearing upstairs in House Finance, and so we're going to take a brief at ease and turn the gavel over to the vice chair, and he'll continue on, and hopefully we'll be into the board of game portion of the meeting by then. So those are the two agenda items that we're going to cover. Representative Rasmussen has just joined us. Welcome. And so, Representative Rauscher, do you want to just give us a brief one or two sentence reminder of your bill?
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. The bill actually is about utilizing your PFD to purchase land.
Microphone.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The bill is basically about utilizing your PFD to purchase land. It also gives a 33%, I guess, edge for veterans who are bidding on land in the land disposable sale where we have where it goes up for auction. So I can say that I think it's a really good bill. I have an amendment that I think will probably address some of the questions that people had in the last time we looked at this, and I'm looking forward to presenting it.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Do committee members have any questions for Representative Rauscher before we take a look at the amendment? Or is that in time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So originally we had 25% on the first purchase, a 33% on the second purchase, and in your original bill, was it 33% thereafter for a third or fourth purchase?
All right, thank you. This is where it got really confusing, and I appreciate the question. In the original bill, after we had looked it over, and we had, I believe we decided that the first purchase was still going to be 25 or vice versa, and the second purchase could have been 33%. The problem was if you were going to use your 33%, it had to be tied to the PFD. But they both were in existence, giving a veteran two chances with a big percentage advantage on each one of the parcels he was bidding on instead of a once-in-a-lifetime, which is where each program tried to be to begin with. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and if I may, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The so it was two purchases at discounts. And what I read in this amendment, and I'm sorry I did not offer any amendments because I worked with Representative Rauscher. He shared with me, and this I think this is a great fix. The only thing that I think that we need to discuss policy-wise, because I do support the amendment, is whether or not we want to make that a limit of two purchases, or do we want to make it indefinite for as many purchases as somebody wants to make on a 33% discount. So, unless I'm reading that wrong. Okay, and I'll yield. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we do have a couple folks online. We have Marty Parsons, director for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and we have Mr. Breeze, the staff to Representative Rauscher, so if you want anyone to explain that. Mm-hmm. And I guess in response to Representative Tuck's question, there is Section 3. A veteran is entitled to one discount under A of this section and one discount under F of this section. So I thought that the part about it being only being able to use once was addressed. Mm-hmm. But let me who do we want to speak to that, Representative Rauscher? Do you want to respond, or should we ask one of those?
There's supposed to be a word or in there somewhere.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure that translated, but I'll let Daryl speak to it right now.
Okay. Daryl, do you I think the point, if I'm understanding it, is that people are interested in making sure that the language is clear that you only get to use either the 25% or the 33%. You can use them both, but you only get to use each of them once. Is that the the part, Representative Tuck, do I have that right?
Through the chair, to Representative Tuck, this is Darrell Brees, Chief of Staff to George Rauscher. Under the bill as it's written currently without the amendment, an individual veteran can get the 25% discount on purchases before August 1st, 2019, only one time. If the bill passes, they can then get the 33% discount after August 1st, only one time. So there's not a third purchase that's available with the discount. Okay. The third purchases will be at the full sale price of the property.
So just communication.
Okay, so we have a couple questions here, and let me just go, because since it was Representative Tuck's question. Okay,
thank you, Madam Chair. So I think my question has been answered, and so if I may repeat what I believe I heard, is that from this day forward, you get one chance at 33%. But, however, if you had been able to take advantage of the 25% before August 1st, 2019, then you get a second stab with the 33%. Am I hearing that correctly?
Mr. Brees?
Through the chair, Darrell Brees, the bill would allow you to get both. It gets 25% on lands purchased beforehand and then 33% on lands purchased after August 1st. The amendment changes things a little bit, so I don't want you to confuse the two.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and let's. It seems like Representative Sponhills has a clarifying question, and then maybe we should consider the amendment that might clear some of this up.
Well, I guess maybe I'm a little confused about where we are procedurally, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the amendment, and the amendment actually eliminates Section 3,
so which is the Representative limit. Rauscher has not moved the amendment yet. We're just doing it. If there are any general questions.
All right.
Yeah, so we could do that. It sounds like that's the point where we need to go so that we can get through this. Okay, do you want to go ahead and move your amendment?
Sure. Madam Chair, at this time, I move Amendment 1, Work Order 31-LS0028/M.1.
Okay, and
for purposes of discussion?
Yes.
And Madam Chair, I might say that going forward, there will be only one choice.
Okay.
Okay. Listening to what Representative Tuck had explained the last time we were here, it's too confusing. Mm-hmm. He wanted to simplify it, and I don't want to speak for him here. He can comment again if he has to.
Okay.
But I had thought that he was looking for one option here and getting rid of the 25 and increasing the only option now and letting it be 33%. And if I'm misstating what he wanted, I apologize, but I believe that's what we were chasing with this amendment.
Okay. Mr. Brees, do you have anything you want to add to that before we do any of the discussion? So if we're getting it right, that this amendment, if incorporated into the bill, after August 1st, it would eliminate the 25%, so then the only option would be this single 33% discount after August 1st, but you could also assign your PFD to make the payment. That's what this bill would accomplish if we amend it. Does Mr. Brees, can you help us understand if we're getting that right?
Through the chair, you are correct. The first change in the bill, or the second change in the amendments, changes the 25% to 33%, and then later in the amendment, we delete the 33% section from the bill totally, so there's only a 33% discount that's offered. Section 6 amendments, it adds a whole new Section 6 in the amendment, which states, it's important to understand this, that if a veteran is taking the 25% discount before the effective date of the bill, which is August 1st, 2019, then they wouldn't be eligible for the 33% discount. They are only eligible for one discount, either the 25 if they already taken it or the 33% moving forward. So it's only one discount per veteran.
Okay.
Clear as mud.
That worked for me. I don't know if other...
Other questions.
Okay. Representative Sponholz.
Thank you. Looking at the amendment on lines 11 and 12 in the amendment, say that essentially that it deletes all of the material on the original bill, which is Section 3 of the original bill, which is the limit on the number of times that a veteran is eligible to use these discounts. So can you point me to the section of law that that allows for the limit to any limitation on the number of times this can be used?
Daryl would be the one.
Yeah.
Certainly. Through the chair, if you read Section 3 and you take out the portions of on the original bill, you take out the portions that are in bold and underlined, mm-hmm. that's what we're proposing to add to existing statute. We're going to, by not adding those to statute, we're just basically deleting this from the bill.
Okay.
But the section of statute that you're looking for is Section 3 of the original bill. A veteran is entitled to only one discount under under this section during a veteran's lifetime. And that's AS 3805-940, letter C.
Because then, Mr. Breeze, we're eliminating Section 4 basically as well, right? Because deleting lines 13 to 19. So that deletes the new section that added the one-third discount, so making the existing Section 1 the default discount section that gets updated to be 33%.
Thank you.
Through the chair, that is correct. We're not deleting all of Section 4. We're deleting small letter F of Section 4, which is the establishment of the 33% discount if you use a PFD. That goes away. Letter G, lines 20 and 21 of Section 4 remain, and are renumbered letter F, which says you can't combine these discounts with, so you can't get three veterans together and get a piece of land for free, basically.
Got it. Makes sense to me, but I got to ask the question. So any questions from other committee members? Is the objection to the amendment maintained?
My objection.
Okay. Is there any other objection to adopting amendment number one? Okay. So amendment number one has been adopted. Please let the record reflect that Representative Hannon has joined us. Welcome. So that brings the underlying bill before us as amended. Any additional committee discussion? Representative Hannon, do you need a moment?
I will try not to huff and puff on the record. I had a question, and not sure if the maker of the bill had anticipated the length of residency. I knew, you know, to qualify, but I guess potentially the idea that somebody comes up, qualifies for the permanent fund dividend 1 year, gets the discount, buys the land, and then does not remain an Alaska resident.
Through the chair.
Sure, Representative Rusher.
I'm not sure that even constitutionally we could stop that, but that you can refer to Daryl, and then you can refer to the Department of Natural.
Yep, we do, Representative Hannon, have from the department, Marty Parsons, are you available?
Madam Chair, this is Marty Parsons, Director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. Yes, I'm available.
Did you hear the question from Representative Hannon? Welcome.
I did. Thank you very much, Representative Hannon, through the chair. Representative Rauscher is correct. Constitutionally, they have to be a resident to qualify to purchase the land, and then after that, if they leave the state, it's no different than if someone bought land through the regular auction. They have to be a resident to purchase the land, and if they leave the next year, they still have the land. So this bill does not change that.
Okay, thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Hannah? No, I'm sorry, I didn't.
No,
okay. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. So is there a clause in statute or in regulation that if the person chooses to purchase the land with their PFD and then they leave the state of Alaska and no longer qualify for the PFD, that they would still have a payment arrangement made when they no longer qualify for a permanent fund dividend?
Through the chair, Daryl Breese, if I may answer that question, the restructuring of the bill with the amendment that we adopted now says you can use the PFD to make the payment, and you can assign your PFD. So if you leave Alaska, you're no longer eligible for the PFD. You have to then make the payments yourself out of your own pocket, separate from the PFD funds that you would have been eligible for if you remained in the state.
It says that in
the statute. Did you hear that, Mr. Breeze? Representative Rasmussen sounded like she was asking if it says that in the bill.
It does not say that in the bill. The PFD, if you're not eligible, the PFD is is only with the way the bill has been amended now, the PFD is basically only being assigned to making your payment. So if you don't have a PFD, you can't say, if you're not receiving it, you can't say, well, take my PFD to make my land payment if you now live in Florida. If you came up as more eligible and purchased the land and got the discount and then 2 years later left and you're no longer eligible for the PFD, you can't assign your PFD that you're not eligible for. So it's not addressed in the bill anywhere, but if you're no longer eligible for the PFD, you can't assign it, and then it's up to you to make the payment to fulfill the contractual obligation that you have with DNR for the land purchase. So you're still on the hook for the payment because you made the agreement with DNR to make the payment, or you just lose the eligibility for the PFD payment because you're no longer eligible for the PFD.
Okay. And Representative Rauscher?
To the Chairman, Madam Chairman, I want to make a statement that one thing we did not cover is mm-hmm. that the PFD is no longer a requirement for the purchase.
Okay.
You could purchase the land whether or not you're a veteran, whether or not you're not a veteran, whether you're just an Alaskan. If you want to put your PFD toward the purchase of this land, you can now do it, even land that you previously owned. But mm-hmm. this is not tied anymore like it was
in the bill. Okay.
With this amendment now, you're free to utilize it if you want, not utilize it this year, next year, and then the following year you can utilize it, or not utilize it at all. It's your option now.
Okay. And maybe, Mr. Parsons, could you confirm for us that it won't be a difficulty for the department to have perhaps this switching of payment arrangements? So an individual at one point has assigned their PFD, but then because they're no longer eligible or just have other plans for the PFD, they then can contact the department to say, okay, now I want to just pay a check by check or do a direct deposit or however many options you have.
Madam Chair, our reading of this, I don't think it's going to be any more of a burden to us. The individual will just need to notify us that they're no longer pledging their PFD to make a payment. We will continue to process their contractual payments as we normally would. If they were going to use the PFD, and even if they fail to notify us, that payment doesn't come through, they unfortunately would then become in arrears, and we would have to potentially start default proceedings if they didn't notify us. But it's fairly standard in the way we handle things, so I don't see this as an additional burden for the division.
Okay. Does that satisfy your question?
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and sorry for being slow on the take on this one, but I'm trying to find out, Representative Sponholz asked about Section 3 being eliminated. Where, again, is it in the bill that it's limited to one-time use? That's directed to whomever can answer.
Okay, Mr. Breeze.
Darrell Breeze here. If you look at Section 3 of the bill, Representative Tuck, if you read that without the parts that are bold and underlined in the original version of the bill, then you have what currently exists in statute, and that's AS 3805-940, letter C, which reads currently, a veteran is entitled to only one discount under this section during the veteran's lifetime. So that's the section of statute that currently exists that limits them to only one discount.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. This is starting to feel a little like the dairy inspector. Just kidding. it's good that we understand it, right?
Oh, yeah.
But 20 different ways to look at it. any other questions or comments? Going once, going twice. Representative Rauscher, can you wrap up? Sure.
I just appreciate it. I hope I took everybody's concerns into account here. I know we've had some conversations in the hall, some right here at the desk, and I believe the amendment was to fix all of everybody's concerns. Everybody thought it was a good bill. There were just some problems with it. And I think that probably the DNR is a little happier because it kind of smoothed it out for them. I'm hoping it is anyway. And I just ask that you all support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. If there are no additional comments or concerns about the bill, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the sponsor substitute for House Bill 3, Work Order 31-LS0028/M as amended, with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay. Seeing no objection, that bill will move from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. And for the folks that are calling in about the board appointees, we're going to have both appointees introduce themselves first and then transition, do the questions and then transition to public testimony on both of them, just so you have a sense of what's going on. Brief at ease. Back on the record. And next item of business is to consider two Board of Game appointees. We have Al Barrett and Orville Huntington. And so what I said earlier is what we're going to do is have both individuals introduce themselves, committee members do questions, and then we'll do the public testimony for both of them at the same time, because I think a number of individuals have called in or are here to testify on both. So hopefully that will work. So for folks that are calling in to testify, we'll be doing these introductions and then committee member questions and then transitioning into the testimony. So that should just be here in just a little bit. So Mr. Orville Huntington, are you available?
Yes, I'm here, Madam. I'm ready to give myself a brief introduction.
Very good. If you could please put your name on the record and do the introduction, and then we'll take questions from committee members.
My name is Orville H. Huntington. I'm originally from Hoosier, but now I live in Fairbanks for work. I'm sorry, this is from my ethics statement. I've moved to Fairbanks for healthcare and work and to support my children's college education. I work here at Town and Chiefs Conference as Wildlife and Parks Director. I have a wife from Norway, a son who works in Anchorage, and a son and two daughters, students at the University of Alaska. None of my immediate family members hunt or trap commercially, but we use subsistence fishing, hunting, trapping, as well as personal use sharing in our family from fisheries in the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you for that brief introduction. And Mr. Huntington, you were previously serving on another board, or recently serving on another board, correct?
On the Board of Fisheries? Yes, ma'am. I served on the Board of Fisheries for 7 years as a representative for the past governors and legislature, and familiar with the process, so thank you for considering it.
Okay, thank you. Questions from committee members. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Ms. through the chair. Mr. Huntington, describe why your interest has gone from Board of Fish to Board of Game and how you think your experience there will benefit you serving on the Board of Game.
Thank you, Madam. I didn't catch your name, but thank you respectfully. And I've been on the Board of Fish for 7 years. I've made regulations that helped fisheries throughout the state, hearing all sides of complicated issues. And as my health continues to not get any better, I need more time to be at home with my family and work, less stress. I think that the Board of Fisheries process is in good hands. I feel like we have good members there that will carry on the work. If they need me, I can always go and speak with them. But I feel for the Board of Game that, we have a long Huntington history of serving on those boards. And I feel that I could do a good job in representing all interests in the state of Alaska. I've been a subsistence use hunter and trapper most of my life, but I've also worked with guides in our region and support their activities where they're helping us manage resources out in rural Alaska. Have extensive fish and wildlife background, heavy in fisheries at the moment, but we're shifting to wildlife here at my employer. And I do a lot of climate change work with international scientists. This will give me more time to focus on those activities and bring more funds home, especially where we're having shortfalls in the state of Alaska on some of our fisheries and wildlife work. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay, any follow-up? Representative Rasmussen has a question.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. I just wanted to verify whether or not you feel you have any conflicts of interest.
No, ma'am. The reason I read my ethics statement is most of that's in there. And usually if I have a conflict, I will state right out that whether I do or not. I used to hunt a lot in Huskia, but I get along real good with the guides there and the other users. I never really had a problem with conflicts except with other agencies fighting amongst themselves. It's hard to get the regulations we want to be fair. And many cases for the state of Alaska set up Alaska fisheries and state waters for that purpose so we could protect our own fisheries rights in the state of Alaska. And it would be the same for the Board of Game. Look out for all people.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. What do you see as the biggest issue or the biggest topics for the Board of Game in the coming year or two?
I think for the Board of Game especially, fisheries has already impacted that significantly, but we're getting a lot of species moving up from the south and a lot of species that are being threatened with extinction like caribou and other things that we really have to watch and manage carefully. A lot of predator management is being done from other places and not by us. I think the people from the state of Alaska can manage those just fine if we keep our laws on the books as much as possible and make them stronger. That's what I feel.
Thank you.
Do you have any thoughts? This is Representative Tarr, pardon me, that on the issue that you just mentioned, do you have any sort of thoughts about things that the board might be wanting to do to look into some of these threatened populations? And I just wonder, another nominee maybe that we'll have here second, some policies may be considered a little more controversial with the kind of predator control kind of things, and I just wonder if you have any thoughts about that in relation to these populations that you're concerned about.
Well, it's difficult to look at any population unbiasedly. So there's a lot of users of these resources that put pressures on them, but a lot of it that has to do with climate change is not because of any user group. It's not because of any government. It's just things that are going to happen over time. I think the more flexible management we have, the better. I think if we work together, all users, all agencies, I think we'll be better off in the long run to protect the rights of all our people to keep hunting and fishing and using those resources into the future. I don't really think of controversy too much. If it can be defended in court and if it's a proposal that's worthy of considering for all the people, then it's fine. But I don't think it's worth just going into fight.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's probably a great person to have on the board because some of these issues are so difficult to work through. Any other questions for Mr. Huntington? Okay, Mr. Huntington, I'm not seeing any other questions from our committee members here. So if you don't mind just staying online with us here because we'll continue on with the second appointee and do the public testimony, and there may be just some questions in the wrap-up. Is that okay?
Yes, ma'am, I'll be here. And thank you so much for consideration. God bless all of you.
Thank you very much for your interest in serving. Next, we are going to go to Al Barrett. Mr. Barrett, are you available?
No.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, you can. And just one moment. I'm going to take a brief at ease.
Committee will come back to order. Mr. Barrett, this is Representative Hopkins, who took over for Representative Tarr because she had to leave. So I'll go ahead and be chairing the committee from here on out. So thank you very much. And Mr. Barrett, please feel free to go ahead and put your name on the record And go ahead and give us your opening statement and your public testimony, or your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Appreciate you being here this afternoon, and I thank the committee members for being available to hear me. For the record, I'm Al Barrett. I moved to Fairbanks in 89, and I've lived here ever since. My lovely wife, Linda Bashke, works for the University of Alaska and enjoys practicing falconry with her peregrine falcon, whose name is Ulu. I have three grown children and one grandson named Riot, all born in Fairbanks. My son works for a big construction company out in Fort Eielson Air Force Base. My oldest daughter, Mackenzie, lives in Arizona and works as an elementary school teacher. My youngest daughter lives here in Fairbanks and works at a local business and was recently hired by major airlines as a ticket agent. I was born in Upper Michigan. My family moved to Wisconsin when we were young. I graduated from Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin High School in 1984. In my early youth, I enjoyed hunting, trapping, and fishing with my brothers and my dad. My dad showed all of us how to appreciate the outdoors. My dad and mother took all of us kids on camping trips each summer. We enjoyed fishing and hiking on those trips. My dad showed myself and my brothers how to responsibly hunt, trap, and fish. One thing that was ingrained on us was to take only what we needed and to treat everything that we harvested with respect. We learned at a young age how to process fish and game. At the age of 12, I started working on a dairy farm. In 82, I was promoted to dairy herdsman. 1984, I joined the United States Army as a mechanic and was stationed in South Carolina, Washington, Germany, reenlisted in Germany to be transferred to Fairbanks, Alaska, where I've always wanted to be for a long time. I was honorably discharged from the Army in 92 and started my Fairbanks fur tannery business, or a fur tannery business in Fairbanks at the same time. This is when I started engaging with the public on a daily basis, hearing about the complexity of regulations and how things existed and why things existed the way they were. I found niches in the community to supplement my business, like shipping meat and antlers from non-resident hunters. I manufactured traps, but I no longer manufacture traps. I sold that business about 5 years ago to pay for my daughter's college. Sometime about 95, I was hooked and I dove in head first. I started getting involved with the board game process. There was much to learn, and I was willing to learn, and I'm still learning today. Around 2005, I was encouraged to apply for a seat on the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and I was elected to that committee. This would be my foundational basis to understanding process, public involvement, management, learning laws and regulations, biology, subsistence, sustained yield principles, and providing wild resources for future generations in Alaska, federal subsistence, and many other issues. I've been the chair of the trapping subcommittee and the chair of the game subcommittee. As an advisory committee member, I've also sat on special working groups such as the Work Sheep Working Group, the 40-mile caribou planning team, the Wood Bison Reintroduction Group, and the Western Arctic Caribou Working Group. All these groups I have participated in, and I have shown me the importance of working together with others, learning the knowledge that others bring to a meeting. I've had several mentors along this journey. They've all been great and helped me to understand and educate me in wildlife management. I would also like to recognize the many hours our local fish and game office has spent with me and other members of the advisory committee educating us. 2007, I received my Class A guide's license. I really did this because I was, about that time, was in, guiding licenses had changed, and when a guide would lose a normal assistant guide or registered guide, they wouldn't be able to just normally fill it like they were. They needed somebody that was licensed. So I voluntarily got my license. And they respected that I had good knowledge of how to hunt and where to find things and keep guided hunters safe. And so it was just filling in as temporary guides as they knew I could fulfill that obligation and they would have good success and good customer relations. I continue to subsistence trap to supplement my income. I teach fur handling and trapping methods. I educate people about the advisory committee process and the board of game. I show interested people how to use the codified, which is a very important tool to understand when drafting proposals or understand situations. I was encouraged by many of my peers and people from the public to apply for the board of game this go-around. They felt I had a strong background and knowledge of wildlife management, not only in the interior region, but in many other regions of the state. I believe I would make a good board member because I understand sustained yield principles, the importance of protecting subsistence opportunities and traditional uses and customs, understanding the complexity of statutory law and the importance of the AC participation in our board process and the importance of public knowledge. Thank you, Representative Hopkins.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. And please stay on the line in case we have any committee questions. Representative Rasmussen has a question.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. I am reading in some of the public testimony that was sent to us that there's a perception that you do not support non-resident hunters' perspectives. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that. How do you feel about non-resident hunters versus resident hunters, and how non-consumptive users play into your views for how the Board of Game should be regulating Alaska's resources?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, I'll answer the first question first. I believe when we have harvestable surpluses that are above and beyond our harvest objectives, this allows a non-resident opportunity. And so when we get into situations like that, I support non-residents, you know, being able to participate in this state. And I'll leave it at that. And your second question, could you repeat your second question again, please?
How do you feel, like, how would you protect those who are non-consumptive users of game?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, I think the Board of Game has the obligation to manage this wildlife on a sustained yield basis, and having healthy populations of ungulates and predators benefits all users in Alaska. When we have ample supply, you still get to watch them, people get to use them, people get to consume them, and I think that's an important thing that the Board of Game needs, that we recognize. Thank you.
Representative Sponholz.
Thank you. Through the chair, there has been some concerns about your commitment to supporting a subsistence priority. Could you address that?
Yes, through the chair. I got a frog in my throat. I support and uphold the statutory regulation or statutory law that gives preference to subsistence users, and that's the highest level that we have, and so I don't understand why somebody would think that I don't support subsistence. I'm a very person that promotes subsistence in the state. Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's my understanding that you authored and supported joint proposals in around 2013 that would have created non-subsistence areas around Bethel and Kodiak.
Oh, yes, thank you, through the chair. Yes, I did author three proposals for the joint board in 2013. Two proposals asked the joint boards to review the credentials for establishing a non-subsistence area in Kodiak and Bethel, and one proposal to reduce the size of the Fairbanks non-subsistence area.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Follow up, Representative Sponholz.
I think that, authoring a proposal that would create a non-subsistence area around Bethel is probably, you know, core to the concern about your commitment to subsistence when the people of the Yukon-Kuskokwim, you know, Delta region have been, hunting and fishing in that area for 10,000 plus years. The creation of a non-subsistence area surrounding the hub community out in the YK region, you know, is deeply concerning to the people of the community. And so it's not surprising to me that there's a lot of concern being raised about your commitment to subsistence. Do you want to address that?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. It was only to bring discussion to the joint board that they go through the criteria of establishing or not establishing a non-subsistence area. And in fact, in no way or no manner does a non-subsistence area preclude anybody that lives within that area from participating in subsistence. Thank you.
Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up, Representative Spahnholz.
I guess that's a little confusing to me, because if we're talking about, you know, managing our resources for maximum sustained yield, and increasing competition in an area could be perceived as reducing the available resource to subsistence users by introducing additional hunters who aren't actually relying on that food for their living. I think, you know, the community of Bethel actually in October 2013 unanimously opposed your proposal. Did you consult them at all?
Excuse me, what did you say, Madam Chair, Representative?
Did you consult the community when drafting this proposal?
Through the chair, no, I didn't. It was just something that I was reading, and I was looking at the criteria for establishing a non-subsistence area. And all I did was, in that proposal, it says it may appear that the Bethel area could be designated as a non-subsistence area, and the joint boards discussed it at full length at that meeting. And that proposal failed. You're correct. Thank you.
Follow-up?
Another follow-up, Representative?
I guess, you know, when you're talking about changing the use of, you know, a limited resource in a community, it strikes me as sort of, you know, wise policy to start by communicating with people in that region, particularly if you're somebody who comes from another community and you're proposing something that would impact their community. But maybe you want to provide an example of how you would uphold current statute, you know, current state of Alaska statutes requiring a subsistence priority.
Thank you, Representative. I'll use myself as a perfect example. I reside in a Fairbanks non-subsistence area, and for the last several years, I receive a Tier 2 moose hunting permit, which is the subsistence permit for the Yukon Flats area, which is only limited to a handful of permits. And I qualify, even though I live in a non-subsistence area, I'm still able to provide for my family and practice and have an opportunity to participate in subsistence.
I guess that doesn't really address my question, but I'll allow other people some time if they want to ask questions.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. You've been in previous presentations to the Board of Game, you've been engaged in discussions about predator control. Can you tell me what actions you would see and propose as a member of the Board of Game for predator control in the interior of Alaska? And I guess in specific, buffer zones around Denali National Park.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative. As a board member, my position is spelled out in statute, and my vote would be based on information provided by professional biologists in the department. And that would be a huge basis for my decision making. Thank you.
Follow up, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Could you share with us what in the past has been your position and advocacy before the board, or how you have now? How would you now separate what has been your personal advocacy in the past and your position as a Board of Game member on that issue?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Hannon. When I testify and when I make comments dealing with IM, I'm usually reflecting back onto the statute, that is the law, that directs the board or the department or the ACs to make viable comments on.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, when you had served on this board in the past, and talking about predator control, when is the best time to do predator control on wolves? What is the best time period, best season?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Tuck. Predator control would be most effective when there's snow on the ground, and it would be, you know, anywhere from November till, depending on the breakup, you know, end of March, maybe possibly April. But with this climate changing, April came pretty quick this year. Thank you.
If I may
follow up, Mr. Representative Tuck.
And can you explain why snow on the ground helps?
The predator programs that are in existence are using aircraft to locate wolves, and so having a base with snow on it, one, doesn't camouflage the wolves as much as leafy vegetation or bare ground. And second of all, recovering those wolves that have been harvested is more accessible with an airplane with skis than it is with an airplane with rubber wheels.
Follow up, Representative.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Just I've had reports from state biologists that said the best time of the year is actually in the spring, because that's because if you go too early in the season, you'll end up with wolves coming back too soon to be able to really have effective predator control. And so I know there's been some debate and even a little bit of politics around trying to have them harvested in the fall because their coats are so much fluffier. But that's not the intention of predator control. It really is in the springtime. And I would think that having it sometime after March would provide enough snow cover for airplanes, as well as be able to keep the wolves from being camouflaged. So I'm still looking into that. But thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to learn more.
Certainly, Representative Tuck. And I've got a quick question to follow up on that. Mr. Barrett, this is Representative Hopkins. In some of the letters, it said you are eligible to be hired as one of those aerial gunners for aerial predator control. Are you still eligible to be hired to do that job?
Through the chair, Representative Hopkins, I don't hold a permit, and I guess if you're insinuating that eligibility requires a permit, I haven't had a permit to be an aerial gunner for about 5 years. But I could apply, as any other Alaskan could.
There was no insinuation there, Mr. Barrett, and that's not what I was intending to do. I was trying to clarify the conflict of interest issues. Would you, as a member of the Board of Game, sign up for that, or would you see that as a conflict of interest as a Board of Game to be an aerial gunner as you're voting on those issues?
Chairman Hopkins, no, I wouldn't. And I haven't done it for the last 5 years due to my commitment to my work and my family.
That makes sense to me. Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. Were there any other questions? Representative Sponholz has a question.
Thank you. You know, you said something earlier in your introductory remarks that sort of piqued my interest. You described subsistence hunting to supplement your income. And it's my understanding that it's illegal to sell, you know, meat or furs that are procured through subsistence. You want to clarify that?
Thank you, through the chair. I misspoke. It was subsistence trapping. That's what I do to supplement my income, and I'm sorry for going over my notes too quickly. I apologize.
Follow up.
Could
you just, for my edification, describe what subsistence trapping entails?
Through the chair, Representative, yes, it is. I trap in an area where there's the fur bearers in that area are what they classify as customary and traditional uses, and that's where I trap, and that's what I do, and I use those furs, and I sell those furs either at auctions or private individuals to supplement our lifestyle.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for that. Any other questions? Mr. Barrett, I want to give you the opportunity. You were up for confirmation back in, I believe it was 2010, and there was some conflict of interest questions. I wanted to give you the opportunity to address those, and if they're still around, or if you have addressed those in the last year since that confirmation vote, if you just wanted to address that for the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Hopkins. I don't think, I think one controversial thing that was back in those days was I was manufacturing and producing traps. Like I said in my opening comments, I no longer own that business and haven't owned it for somewhere around 5 years. Don't intend to start it up again. And as far as my fur tannery and guiding operations and subsistence trapping, I don't see where there's a conflict, but if there's a unit or a species that is particularly close to me, or I have to make sure that I make that comments in my statements at the beginning of the meeting, my ethics statement in the beginning of the meeting, and allow the board chairman and Department of Law to weigh in there on which I should be recused from and which I shouldn't be recused from.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Brett. Appreciate that. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Barrett, when you were proposing to allow baiting bears in the state of Alaska, you had given a preference to commercial guides and non-residents to allow 10 bait stations when residents were only allowed 2 bait stations. Can you explain why you were making that proposal?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I don't believe that was my proposal. I believe that was a proposal that was generated through a town hall gathering after a meeting to hash out some bear baiting issues with baits, and there was probably several other things if I remember correctly. And so that's what came out of a subcommittee after a meeting with new draft language.
And if I thank you. And maybe you didn't propose it, but you definitely endorsed it. Can you explain why you were endorsing that? Why you were advocating for it?
Through the chair, Representative, there was a town hall meeting, I'll call it that, but it's a subcommittee meeting after, the board chairman produces and all stakeholders show up and sit around a table and they negotiate and compromise what would satisfy the most user groups and still allow all the opportunity that we can. And so I voted for it. I didn't promote it, but I respected the committee substitute language that came out of that. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Sponholz has another question.
Yeah, thank you. Have you in the past opposed traditional use tags for funeral potlatches? And if so, could you explain why?
Through the chair, Representative, no, I have not.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Mr. Barrett. All right, so not seeing any further questions from the committee, I'm going to go ahead and open this up to public comment. We've got a few people here in the room, I believe, and so I'm going to start with them. Let's see. I believe we have a Ron Somerville in the room. You'd like to come up to the table and put yourself on the record and give us your testimony. Because we've got a few people on, I'm going to ask you limited to 2-ish minutes. I'll give you some leeway, but thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Somerville. I live here in Juneau, 8126 Keegan. I'm a lifelong member of the state of Alaska. I'm representing Territorial Sportsmen today. We're a local conservation sportsman organization here in Juneau. We have about 1,200 members. I delivered to the chairman today, co-chairs, a letter from TSI supporting all of the nominees for both the Board of Fish and the Board of Game. And the reason is that the nominations provide a balance on the board, and I hope the committee members consider this. You may not have the greatest admiration for a particular member, but you look at it as a whole, they represent a broad spectrum throughout the state. And we feel that's the most important. We could argue against Orville or Al or Jerry Burnett, who used to be our president, but we don't. We think this is a good balance. I want to comment about a couple of things that have been said in committee. One is, Al pointed out, there's a law that requires intensive management. And you can't really penalize somebody for following the law unless you change the law. So unless there's some ambiguities in the law, I'd hope that, in fact, the members would consider that. The other is predator control. I served on Jay Hammond's D2 task force for 4 years. I was responsible for boundaries, almost all the mapping that was done. I worked for Fish and Game for 24 years. And the boundaries that were finalized in Anilka were accepted by all the conservation organizations. I personally talked with the Denali, core Denali Park was expanded by preserves. That was the buffer. And I was served on the board when this thing of expanding the buffer to cover wolf packs that leave the board, that we rejected that. And later the board adopted and then rejected when Al apparently was on the board. My point is, you can't keep going back and modifying these boundaries. We have 120-some million acres of federal lands in this state that take away a good chunk of our management. And to keep mushing these boundaries back and forth, the Denali wolf pack thing is an anomaly. But it is important for the purposes of enhancing the park. But wolves are going to move in and out of these boundaries. And ask that we have more buffers, to me, as Alaskan, longtime Alaskan, is unreasonable. And to penalize Al because he's stuck with the original boundaries, which I testified at that meeting, it to me is unpatriotic to our state. So I'm just saying we do support Al as well.
Thank you, Mr. Somerville. Are there any questions for Mr. Somerville?
I mean,
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mrs. Somerville, for your testimony. I didn't hear anyone talk about the buffer. Maybe I misunderstood that. But if you don't mind explaining the buffer zone real quick for us, because I think more of it was what I heard was boundary lines for subsistence.
Subsistence.
So, yeah, but if you don't mind sharing what your concerns are about the buffer.
The buffer has to do with, if you read a good part of the opposition to Al, it has to do with the Denali Pack, and that some of those have wandered outside and been trapped. And I'm just saying those boundaries were accepted by all of the environmental groups when D2 passed. And that was the buffer that they've wanted for those packs, and particularly some of the interior packs, and the caribou and the moose, was all in the preserve. It just happens to be in this part near the park boundary, near the road system. They agreed to that. Unfortunately, I guess for that wolf pack, they wandered out. And I'm just saying, I always encourage the board, don't modify these boundaries. Keep doing that, and you're penalizing Alaskans, because we bought a compromise back in 1980.
If I may?
Yes, sir, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we talk about predator control, doing something with the buffers, whether expanding them or contracting them, couldn't that be a part of the role of predator control, or to look into intensive management? Or is that just off the table?
Well, it could be a part of it, but in most cases it's not.
Okay.
I served on the board, and we started the predator control program again in the state, and very carefully selected areas. We had local support. It had a good chance of success. There was money to pay for. In other words, the state was providing money to the state to follow up and monitor and all those things. And if you look at in detail, there isn't that much predator control throughout the state. The conflicts are mostly with the federal agencies who refuse to provide any predator control to benefit the subsistence users.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Somerville. Representative Tallarico.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, just to add, if any of the committee members are really interested in the location of the buffer, I live less than a mile from the previous buffer zone. And I live inside the last proposed buffer zone. So I just invite any committee members that want to talk about it, look at a map. I have that available. Come see me, and I can explain to you exactly where it is.
I concede to Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Somerville.
Is that a dinner invitation?
That'll be a dinner invitation.
Next up in the room, we have Lynn Davis. Can Lynn, if you're still here, please come up and put your name on the record and give us your testimony, please.
Thanks a lot. Lynn Davis, 26-year Alaska resident, retired state worker. And I have followed the bog and their decisions over the years. And I've been really concerned that except for maybe 1 2-year period, I feel like no one, no board has really represented my wildlife appreciator point of view, my non-consumptive wildlife. I have to say that nothing that Mr. Barrett said today convinced me that he would be looking out for those of us in the state who do not wish to kill, and in many cases egregiously, these animals or eat them. So I just don't feel he said anything very specific or viable, and that helps me feel he would represent me. I also, he has a history of some really unusual behavior and comments, and I feel concerned about that, so I would urge you not to approve him. I think we can do better. We can have someone who's more professional, maybe more ethical, and more responsive to the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Davis. Question from the committee, Representative Rasmussen.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hopkins. I was just wondering if you could expand or elaborate on your comment about his unusual behavior and comments.
There is that video of him skinning a wolf. Some things are kind of too hard to even talk about. And there is the statement that he would love to take a snow machine and drive along the border and harvest wolves. Generally feel like people don't need to sport those kinds of comments when they're doing professional work for our wildlife and for the people of Alaska.
Yeah, absolutely, Representative.
From my understanding, he makes a living as a tanning and fur. So he does tannery. So I guess my question is how it would be considered unusual behavior for him to video himself just doing his work or his job. If, you know, skinning a wolf mm-hmm. is what he does as a living, and I understand that you disagree with that action, but I guess I'm just a little bit confused about how that would be considered unusual behavior.
Well, apparently it's what he said, or it was the tone, the, I may not get the proper word to describe it, but there is a way of just alienating people with his sporting doing it, because he knows many people in Alaska, you know, really prize the wolves, and it's a lifetime best to travel to Alaska and see a wolf in the wild. It seemed immature, inappropriate, and as it seems like there have been a number of those things, I would select somebody more professional.
Thank you for your clarification.
Any further questions? Thank you, Ms. Davis, for your testimony. We're going to go ahead and jump online to begin with, and the first person I've got listed here is Mike Tinker. Mr. Tinker, if you could put your name, if you're still there, put your name on the record, and please give us your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. I appreciate the opportunity. I am Mike Tinker. I live in Esther, Alaska, just west of Fairbanks, and have for over 50 years. I'm speaking today for the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association, which is also known as the in favor, respectfully, of our founder, the Laundry House Gang. We're the folks that drafted the intensive management statute to help the Department of Fish and Game focus on managing game resources for Alaskans' uses, and yes, that includes all uses. Certainly, if there are abundant wildlife resources, it's a much more productive job to manage them and to allocate them, as is the job of the Board of Game. The Board is the authority for allocation. When asked who should serve on the Board, we support Alaskans who are experienced hunters and trappers and other wildlife users, and those who have been involved in the management and regulatory systems, such as advisory committee members, and participants in organizations who support wildlife, whether it be from professional hunting to photography. Those who oppose hunting and trapping in the state are always critical of those of us who have to skin an animal that is trapped in order to get the value out of the fur, whether it's a wolf or a marten, or if you look at the regulations, it could be something even smaller than that. Mr. Barrett is the best qualified appointee to come before the committee in the three decades I've been involved with the Board of Game. Although it's a political process, he is the least political person I know. He has served on and represented the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee and for over 15 years and served with distinction on some very difficult and complex planning teams such as the Western Arctic Caribou Herd. He volunteers to help trappers and hunters at the fur auctions held by the trappers in Anchorage and Fairbanks to support their organizations. I would like to just address for a second this non-subsistence area questioning and point out to you all, and I realize these are very complex things and no one can be expert in it, even those like myself and Al and that have been involved in my own personal venue for over 35 years. But those are regulations that are in the book, how you look at them. And we have probably a dozen communities in the state that meet some of the basic criteria for non-subsistence areas by population or nothing else. To look at those does not mean a person is advocating for non-subsistence areas. They're merely asking to follow the criteria to look at them. And yet I feel that those who are questioning this somehow think that Mr. Barrett is pushing non-subsistence areas. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And I know from experience that Al never said anything about driving along on a snow machine. I have to tell you, that's fake news. And if you've got that out of somebody that sent it to you, I would check the source and try to find out what reference they're using. I would also like to speak just for a second this afternoon about Orville Huntington. I've known Orville for quite a while and with his work and his family's work in the Koyukuk. He is an experienced board member, most recently serving on fisheries, as you determined there in your questioning. We're lucky to have him agree to continue his service to Alaskans on the Board of Game. He is another of this group of appointees who understand the various values that erupts around the subsistence and also the needs of other Alaskans to participate in the harvest, whether it be with a camera or some fatal means of Alaska's wildlife. I would urge your support for this group of Alaskans to serve us on the Board of Game. I recognize that they won't all fit all of the criteria in Alaska Statute 1605-221. But if you look at that, you know that Alaska hunters are not divided by political affiliations. Hunters and trappers are Democrats and Republicans and independents or have no affiliation. And that's why that statute directs that they be appointed and confirmed without regard to political affiliation. And I hope you will keep that to heart as you continue your discussions. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker. I believe we've got a couple questions. Representative Rauscher, you've got a question for him?
Yeah. Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Tinker, I guess I'm hoping you're qualified to answer this question. I just assume that on the Board of Game, you would have some experience in the field of either taking, harvesting, shooting, involved in, or some sort of connection with game, and that unless you were actually doing that, you probably wouldn't know a whole lot about what's going on the board and how it all interrelates. Is that a fair statement, or am I a little far from where I should be going there?
No, I think it's a very fair statement, even for those of us who are just testifying. In my own case, I have 30 years of experience with the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, including over 20 as chairman. I have represented them at literally dozens of Board of Game meetings, some Board of Fish meetings, lots of special meetings. I once held a meeting separately from a Board of Game meeting, but while they were in session, for 50 advisory committees, so that we could start to discuss with the board how to best use advisory committees. I'm a lifelong hunter and trapper. I've quit trapping now because my hair is getting a little gray and it's a little harder to get around than it used to be. And I have a ton of experience with hunting almost all of the species in Alaska, except those in places like Southeast, because I live in Fairbanks and have spent most of my time up here on the northern parts of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Tinker? All right. Well, thank you very much, sir, for coming and giving your testimony today. Say hello to Fairbanks for us. Next up, we have Virgil Umpenauer from Fairbanks as well. Mr. Umpenauer, why don't you please put your name on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Virgil Umpenauer. I live in North Pole. I'm here today representing the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee, of which Mr. Tinker and I serve. I also served 3 terms on the Board of Fisheries previously. The Fairbanks Advisory Committee met on Wednesday evening, and we actually, our meeting went till 10:30 Wednesday evening, but we unanimously supported all of the governor's appointees to both the Board of Game and the Board of Fish. But I want to specifically speak about Mr. Barrett. Mr. Barrett has been a member of the Fairbanks AC for approximately 15 years, and he, as the previous speaker said, he has served on a number of committees representing the Fairbanks AC. Those were mentioned earlier. He's very knowledgeable. Very few members of the public have their own copy of the codified regulations. Mr. Barrett does have his own copy. He knows how to use the codified regulations, and he educates a lot of the public because he has a public place just like I do. I have a meat and fish processing facility in Fairbanks. A lot of the public come by, ask me questions about hunting and fishing and the regulations and the process. Well, they do the same thing at Mr. Barrett's business at his tannery. And so both him and I get the opportunity to help the public learn about the hunting and fishing regulations and the regulatory process and just ways to educating the public on different techniques on where to go hunting and et cetera. But anyway, I speak as a person. Mr. Barrett is an exceptionally well-rounded person with extremely high ethics and moral values. As far as Mr. Huntington, I've known Mr. Huntington and his family for many years. His uncle Sidney served on the boards for more than 20 years. Him and I served together many years ago on negotiating the salmon treaty with Canada for the Yukon River. But I strongly, as a person, support Orville as well. But as I said, the Fairbanks AC voted unanimously to support all of the governor's appointees. I will just have one other minor comment, that's for me basically, and that is I served on that committee that the Board of Game Sherman called to come up with a solution on the bear baiting issues, and that was, as Mr. Brett said, in the evening at a Board of Game meeting, and that's when that committee worked together of members of the public and hunting guides. I'm also a master hunting guide. And that's when they came up with registered guides could have 10 base stations for their clients rather than trying to get clients to come to Fish and Game and register two base stations. And the department participated in that, and that was what, between the public, the department, and the board, that's what they came up with as a solution on the bear baiting for the bear bait stations. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Umfenauer. Does anybody have any questions for him? All right, it does not look like that. Thank you very much, Mr. Umfenauer, for your testimony today, and appreciate that. So next up on the list, we are going to OffNet, and we have a Mark Richards with the Resident Hunters of Alaska. Hello, Mr. Richards. Please go ahead and put your name on the record and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Hopkins and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Richards. I'm Executive Director of Resident Hunters of Alaska. And I'm here today representing our some 2,000 members from across the state in support of both Orville Huntington and Al Barrett to the Board of Game. Concerning Mr. Huntington, I know Orville from his time on the Board of Fish. When I've attended and testified at Board of Fish meetings, I've always been very impressed with his conduct, his reasoning, and his rational approach during deliberations on some very controversial issues. Certainly his time on the Board of Fish means he could step right into a Board of Game seat. He brings a wealth of knowledge about hunting practices and subsistence issues to the table, and we're just extremely grateful he's willing again to serve on the Board of Game, and we hope you'll support him. Concerning Mr. Barrett, this perhaps might sway some opinions. I will say that we do support Mr. Barrett. Was I pleased with his question from Representative Rasmussen about how he treats non-residents versus residents, and his answer that as long as there was a harvestable surplus, everyone should be able to participate. Certainly one of Resident Hunters of Alaska's big issues is that the allowance of non-residents to take 60-80% of our sheep in the interior, we don't agree with that. So I just want to point out that the reason RAC supports Board of Game appointments isn't because we feel somebody will agree with us, but it's because we base it on their knowledge and experience in hunting and wildlife management issues. I serve with Mr. Brett on the advisory committee. I'm vice chair. As people said, he has he's long known for his experience and knowledge of our fish and game issues and regulations. I can think of nobody better qualified, according to the current statute, to serve on the Board of Game. So for that reason, we support him, and we hope you guys will support him too. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Richards. Are there any questions for the testifier? Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much, Mr. Richards. They had a District 4 for me. And next up, I'm going to go to Joe Klusch, which I believe is the correct. No, well, Mr. Klusch, I apologize if I spelled that wrong, but please put your name on the record and provide your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Klusch. It's often mispronounced. I live in King Salmon, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I live in King Salmon and have done so since, I think, 1970. I've been active full-time hunting and fishing guide since 1976. Served nearly 40 years on the Naknek-Quijac Advisory, State Fish and Game Advisory Committee. And attended so many Board of Game and Board of Fish meetings, I can't count them, along with Regional Council subsistence meetings. So I am quite familiar with board process as well as wildlife management in Alaska, and particularly in this region of the state. I want to offer my support for Orville Huntington and for Al Barrett and their confirmation to be appointed to the Board of Game. Orville, in particular, has a family heritage, as most of you should know by now, that is just really amazing. The years and the dedication and the understanding of Alaska's wildlife and their service to both Boards of Fish and Board of Game, members of his family. And he's particularly knowledgeable and sensitive to the needs and lifestyles of rural residents, and he offers a tremendous balance to the board, and I wholeheartedly support him. As regards Al Barrett, Al is a unquestionably an accomplished outdoorsman. He's extraordinarily knowledgeable on subjects of game management. And as Virgil Uppenhauer indicated, on the codifieds and the regulation and the process, that's extremely important. This isn't just how you feel about things. You've got to know about this process to be effective. And I think Al would serve the state of Alaska and all user groups extremely well. I believe that both these individuals would put wildlife conservation and hunting opportunities for all Alaska residents first, and that they are dedicated and have the time and willingness to do this is just amazing. This is not an easy job. I would also like to reiterate or comment on some of the very important points that Ron Somerville made, going back into the history of Anilka and how the preserves, how the withdrawals were created from antiquities through the Lands Act and then the preserve designations. And you hear this, the buffer terminology. In fact, the 1980s Land Act, as it was finalized, the preserves were considered as a compromise. They were extensions, substantial extensions to all the parks, and many new refuges and monuments were created. They are, in fact, themselves buffers. This buffer game, you can have a buffer to buffer the buffer. The next thing I want to comment on, and I do this with all due respect, it's terminology that's often used, and that I am a non-consumptive user. I live at the boundary of Katmai National Park. I operate in Aniakchak National Park and Monument. I'm a pre-Anilka baby boy, so to speak. And I can assure you there is no such thing as non-consumptive use. Just because it's closed to hunting and trapping doesn't mean those visitors there are not consumptive. In fact, to the contrary, there's far more infrastructure required, buses and roads and bridges and ranger stations and all of this stuff, Princess Tour, you name it. That's not non-consumptive. It takes space, it takes infrastructure, it takes energy, water, you name it. So that really, I didn't anticipate would be a part of this confirmation hearing, but I did want to make that point, and I make it with all due respect, because I understand fully that there are a lot of people that don't appreciate hunting and trapping, and somehow think that it's contrary or not compatible with wildlife viewing. They are both quite compatible. Hunting is, in fact, a wildlife watching exercise. Anyway, I'll let that subject go, but I wanted to make those points. And I, again, will say that I think both Al Barrett and Orville will make really good board members. If I had any doubts about their dedication to wildlife resources or to subsistence, I wouldn't be supporting them. So that concludes my comments, unless you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Klutch. Are there any additional questions for him? Nope, no questions for you, Mr. Klutch. Thank you for your time today and for your testimony. Next up, we have Wayne Kubat of the, please, Mr. Kubat, if you could please put your name on the record and provide your testimony.
Chairman. My name is Wayne Kuba, Vice President of Alaska Professional Hunters Association, APHA for short, and I'm speaking today on their behalf. APHA would first of all like to extend our sincere appreciation to former board members Teresa Sager-Albaugh, Nate Turner, and Karen Linnell for their past commitment and service to Alaskans and our wildlife resources during their tenure on the Board of Game. The new nominees have big shoes to fill, but we feel confident that they will prevail. APHA supports both nominees and feel they will provide balance on the board. Mr. Barrett is a long-serving member of the Fairbanks AC. Many of our members know Al and consider him to be genuine, hardworking, and fair. He is knowledgeable on wildlife issues and cares about the process. He's a lifelong hunter and fisherman and is committed to ensuring that all Alaskans continue to have access to our fish and game resources that we all hold dear. Serving on the Board of Game requires a personal sacrifice of time and energy, but we are confident that Mr. Barrett is willing to make that sacrifice and believe he will be a strong asset to the board. Orville Huntington, APHA believes it is important to have a mix of different voices and viewpoints on the board. While the decisions that the board makes affect all Alaskans, they often have the greatest impact on rural areas. For this reason, we feel it is particularly critical to have a strong rural voice. We feel that Mr. Huntington will bring that voice to board deliberations. Finding qualified, fair-minded people who are willing to serve on the Board of Game is challenging, and we appreciate that Mr. Huntington is willing to serve. We look forward to getting to know him through the process. The APHA respectfully asks that you support the appointments of Al Barrett and Orville Huntington and forward them for confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kuba. Are there any questions? All right, seeing none. Looks like we have one last one, and this is Mary Mathias. Ms. Mathias, if you're still on board, could you please put your name on the record and provide your testimony?
Thank you. My name is Mary Mathias. I'm the Natural Resource Director for the Aroostook Native Council here in Bethel. I am here to testify on Albert's nomination and the proposal that was issued back out in 2013. Just listening to everyone speaking, there were a lot of good things that they all said, but you know, in considering the proposal 41, where he was trying to create a proposal addressing that Bethel is a non-subsistence area. We feel that we do oppose the nomination because by the looks of this, what he had sent out and created and you know, wanting to recognize Bethel area as a non-subsistence area when we have been for a millennium subsistence user through our tradition and way of culture and, you know, economic culture. We feel that it would impact our subsistence priorities in our area, and we would not want to have officials that have or are openly hostile to Alaska Natives hunting and subsistence in general. Or have the best interests in recognizing our subsistence rights, nor any who don't have the best intentions in recognizing our subsistence values. And, you know, like if he does get the position, I would strongly recommend that, you know, before passing a bill or proposal, that he should be reaching out to these communities such as Bethel, the southwestern rural villages who rely on subsistence for their food, you know, in based on traditional hunting and fishing values. I'm sorry, please. This is like my first. I'm getting used to this here.
That's all right, Ms. Mathias. I completely understand. We're being patient with you. We understand.
Yeah. And so, subsistence is our priority here. And we would really like to have officials who are for the Alaska Natives, you know, that are there to serve in their best intentions and not overrule or ignore our rights as subsistence users. And because, you know, there are many of us who travel to attend Board of Fish and Board of Game, and listening to other people testify on their needs and why they want our subsistence rights protected and recognized. It should not be ignored and nor disregarded in any kind of way. You know, going back to this 2013 proposal, I think that would conclude my testimony here for today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mathias. Just for one second, I want to see if there's any questions on the committee. Representative Rauscher, you have a question?
No, I don't. I just want to thank the person who testified. It's not easy. And we appreciate all testimony, and we thank her for her time.
Certainly we do. Thank you very much. That looks like we have no more questions. And thank you very much, Ms. Mathias, for testifying today. I'd like to give the appointees the opportunity for wrap-up comments. If Mr. Huntington, are you still online?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you can hear me.
Any wrap-up comments, Mr. Huntington?
Oh, no, I just, I wish I had more time to help, but I will do my utmost to carry out the duties of being on the Board of Game. I have a moral obligation to do so, and I think the last testimony really hit home that, you know, there's a lot of cultural significance in all we do out in rural Alaska, and I understand those issues, and I was born and raised with it, but I'm also a scientist, so I understand the issues of the Department of Fish and Game, and I work closely with them, and I look forward to finishing out my career helping as much as I can.
Thank you very much, Mr. Huntington, for your willingness to step up and serve. Mr. Brett, would you have any closing comments you'd like to provide the committee?
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. No, I would just like to thank the committee for addressing any concerns that they had. They had wonderful questions. I hoped I could answer them to the best of my ability, and if there's anything that needs to be have clarity, I'd be more than glad to have a phone conversation with you. And again, thank you, Chair and committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brett, for your willingness also to step up and serve. Just to double check, is there anybody else in the room or online who would like to testify? Seeing none, we will close public testimony. Thank you very much. And Mr. Representative Sponholz, can you make a motion, please?
The House Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees, Orville Huntington and Al Barrett, to the Board of Game, and recommends that the names be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect the intent of any members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you very much. Members, please stick around to sign that confirmation sheet. And members, please note that the House Resources Confirmation Hearings that was scheduled for Saturday has been canceled. The committee will now meet jointly on Monday with the House Fisheries Committee to consider the governor's appointees to the Board of Fish, and I believe that's at 6:30. Also, it is likely that we will cancel the committee meetings for the following Friday. So Monday, we're going to be here at 1 p.m., then again at 6:30 p.m., and if there's no further business today, please go ahead and we're going to adjourn this meeting at whatever time it is, 2:41.